You are listening to the Midcurrent Church Podcast. Today's message is week 4 in the final message of our sermon series, Cut It Out, Creating Space for God. For more information and to visit us online, check out midcurrentchurch.org and find us on Facebook and Instagram. And now, here is Pastor Sten Carlson with today's message.
I am slowly starting to realize that I have some bit of a strange obsession, I suppose you could say, when I have Apple Maps pulled up on my phone, and particularly on a road trip. I do every single thing that I can to beat the estimated time of arrival. It is strangely satisfying to me to think that I am making up time and that I'm getting somewhere faster than I was supposed to, or that somehow, you know, Google or whoever thought that I was supposed to. Strangely satisfying. My kids even get in on this now on a road trip. Inevitably, one of them, you know, from the back seat will look up to the front where they can see our one of our phones sit, and they'll celebrate loudly if they happen to catch the moment when they see even 1 minute shaved off of our ETA. Dad, here's a minute. Oh, you know, they're going crazy. And it's a complex formula, because a few hours into a long road trip, you can make up 4, 5, 6, 7 minutes even in relatively short amount of time. But then you have to factor in gas stops and then bathroom stops where you lose a little bit of ground that has to then be regained somewhere down the line. So it's a constant battle. It's a constant give and take race against the clock. Does anybody else play this game on a road trip? Whew, okay, there's a few hands going up. A confirmation that I am not the strange one in the room. Okay, maybe you don't take things that far. If you didn't raise your hand, maybe you don't take things that far. But here's what I really do believe that we all have in common. Here's what I'm gonna guess is true for most of us in our everyday life. We don't drive the speed limit. Okay, let's just be honest. Even when we're, you know, we're just kind of buzzing around town, we're running errands, or we're dropping the kids off at school or getting them to practice, we're always kind of pushing the envelope. We're always testing, the limits a little bit. My kids are always like, "Dad, are you speeding?" Right? We're always kind of pushing the envelope, testing the limits a little bit, because where we need to be is somehow more important than where anyone else needs to be. Am I right about this? Okay, and so we never leave enough time. We're always running a little bit behind. We always cut it a little bit too close, and we're always trying to just save a couple extra minutes. It would seem as though in our everyday life and our everyday coming and going, it seems to me that we are always in a hurry. I'll be honest. I'm being very honest here. I am. For some reason, I'm always in a hurry. Road trip or just a trip to the grocery store, I want to make good time, right? I want to defy the odds, or at least just whatever Apple Maps, said was expected of me. I want to beat the odds. I want to make up some time. And that's why I was fascinated to discover this week that all of my inner NASCAR driving tendencies are actually not leading to all that much. You see, I read this week that the average driver, get this, I read this week that the average driver only saves 26 seconds by speeding. 26 seconds. All of the impatience, all of the anxiousness, all of the honking, all of the passing, all of the light was still yellow, you know who you are, all the hurry for 26 seconds. Okay, the same report also said that the difference from going 80 to 90 miles an hour only saves you on average less than 1 minute. It's a sobering thought, but if it's true, which I think it is, if it's true, then here's the reality. We're always in a hurry, but we're never really moving any faster. Think about it. On average, we're saving 26 seconds. We're always in a hurry, but we're never really moving any faster. I think that this actually paints a pretty accurate picture of our lives, not just our driving habits, but our lives in general. In fact, I saw, this is just silly, I saw an Instagram post this week from a comedian that I follow. He's a Christian comedian. His name's Michael Jr. I saw him post something that coincidentally said almost the same thing that I thought maybe I just kind of made up. But it was a small part of one of his routines that he posted a line. And here's what he said. He said, the speedometer is an exact replica of what's going on in your heart. Think about that. The speedometer is an exact replica of what's going on in your heart. And my fear, gang, is that the same thing that's happening out on the road for us is happening in our heart. We're always in a hurry, but not really getting anywhere all that fast. My fear is that as a society, we are moving at such a fast, loud, noisy, busy pace, but never ever arriving anywhere any faster. Never arriving at any place faster, and maybe not really ever arriving at any place of importance at all. Too many people today are exhausted from hustling, but are totally unhappy with the lives that they're living. Too many people today are absolutely worn out from going, but completely unfulfilled. Too many people today are doing it all, but missing it all at the very same time. I would argue that too many people today have a calendar that is completely full, but a heart that is totally empty. That's my fear, that too many of us, you, me, all of us, we have a calendar that is completely full of all the things that we think we need and all the things that we think we gotta do and be a part of and all the things we think we gotta go, you know, check off the list. We got a calendar that's full, but a heart that is completely and totally empty. And I can't help but wonder if that describes any of you here today. Calendar full, heart empty. You're doing it all, but not really feeling all that full. If so, I would say, number one, you're not alone, and number two, you're not out of luck. But what I do think you're gonna need is a serious course correction somehow today. And it begins, this course correction, it begins with the elimination of hurry from your life, from all of our lives. And that is exactly what I wanna talk about with the time that I have left today in the last week of our series, Cut It Out. You have heard me say now for 3 weeks in a row that January is often the time of year that so many of us were so focused on cutting out all of the, you know, the food and all the bad habits and all the activities that prevent us from the healthy life that we desire. And this is a great way to start the new year. And all I have been saying throughout this month of January, all I have been trying to suggest is that we take the same approach to our faith and our spiritual life. And so this series this month was designed to talk about and to suggest some of the things that I think we need to cut out of our lives, and so that there would be more space for God in our lives, and so that there would be more space for the things of God or the voice of God in our life. And so over the course of the series, we talked about cutting out comparison in our everyday life. We talked about cutting out cutting back on social media and the activity that we spend online. We talked last week about complaining and our need to cut that out of our lives. And today I want to talk about hurry. It may not seem like a huge spiritual obstacle, hurry. How much we hustle, how busy we are. It may not seem like a huge spiritual obstacle to you, but I would suggest that it very, very much is. In his book, The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry, Pastor John Mark Comer references a quote from Corrie Ten Boom, who once said this, that if the devil can't make you sin, he'll make you busy. Let that sink in for a second. If the devil can't make you sin, he'll make you busy. The reality is, gang, both sin and busyness or hurry and hustle, while we might put them in separate, unrelated categories, I think they have the same effect, that they cut off your connection to God. They cut off your connection to other people, maybe even cut off your connection to your own soul. And so today I want to explore the connection between the pace at which we are operating in the progress that we want to be making in life and in faith. I want us to understand the connection between pace and progress. And what I would suggest to you today as we just get the ball rolling is this, that a slower pace often leads to greater progress. I want us to understand this connection, what connection there is at all in our spiritual lives or in our life in general between pace and progress. And I want to begin by suggesting that a slower pace leads to greater progress. And that is the exact opposite of the world that we live in. You see, we pride ourselves on how busy our lives are. Like it's some kind of, you know, badge of honor, like some kind of spitting contest, right? Society loves to celebrate being busy and having so many things to do and lots of places to be. And yet what is fascinating to me as someone who is trying to follow Jesus, as someone who is trying to live more like Jesus lived, and to someone who's trying to live more like Jesus taught us to live, what is fascinating to me is that Jesus, the one who made more spiritual progress in just 3 years of his lives than some of us do in a lifetime, what's fascinating to me is that Jesus was never in a hurry. And it never hindered the work that he was called to do in the world. In fact, twice in the New Testament, there's two instances where people call on Jesus to come heal their sick relatives. And along the way, Jesus is making his way to them. And along the way, he stops and he takes some detours and he allows himself to be interrupted. And his disciples are always like, yo, you know, Jesus, we gotta go, man. Let's pick up the pace. And yet he never seemed to care. And by the time he arrives on scene in both the cases, it appears to be too late. Jesus missed his window. Took too much sweet time, right? People are sad. People that called on him are upset and they're frustrated. They're mad at Jesus for seeming to take his sweet time. But he was never bound by time. And in both instances, one with his friend Lazarus and the other with when it came to the daughter of a local official named Jairus, in both cases, sure, he's late to the party, but in both cases, Jesus heals the sick and he brings those who appear to be dead, he brings them back to life, okay? Jesus was never in a hurry. And beyond that, here's what I want us to hear today. He never asked his followers then, and now, us, right? He never asked us to hurry or to hustle either. He never said, hey, the early bird gets the worm. He never said, hey, gang, pick up the pace. You're falling behind. In fact, he had an entirely different message for his closest followers who had been given the most massive assignment. And so I want us to see today what it is that he had to say to them in the midst of one of the largest assignments that he ever handed out. I want us to see what he had to say to them because I believe it's the same thing that someone here today needs to hear as well. I want you to hear this because I know that it feels at times like you gotta keep grinding. I know that, you know, that's the popular message in the world today. I know you've got a lot on your plate. I know you've got a lot on your to-do list that makes you feel at times like you can't stop if you're gonna make it all happen, if you're gonna do what you need to do. And I do believe that you can and that we can make it happen. I believe God's called us to great things. We can make it happen, but I do believe that there is a code to this puzzle that we need to crack, a secret ingredient for how it is that we actually make the progress that we desire and that God might desire of us as well. And I think the secret ingredient is tucked into the words of Jesus's response to this group of guys to whom he gave the largest of responsibilities. And I want us to see what he says to them because he has given them some pretty tall orders. And right in the middle of them carrying it all out, he says something to them that I think more of us need to hear today. So if you would, turn your attention with me. You'll see it on the side screens in just a moment. Turn your attention to the New Testament book of Mark, chapter 6. Here's what's happening. Jesus began his ministry in his own hometown, but he eventually realized that he needed to kind of take this show on the road. And he does, and he also gets his disciples in on the action. And that's exactly where we're going to drop in on the first part of this story. Here's Mark chapter 6. We're going to drop in on verse 7. It says this, "And he called his 12 disciples." This is Jesus taking the show on the road. "Jesus called his 12 disciples together, and he began sending them out two by two." Listen to this, "giving them authority to cast out evil spirits." One Bible scholar, he calls this the deputizing of the disciples. I like that. The deputizing of the disciples. Picture it. Jesus, you know, handing out heavenly sheriff stars, right, to them, sending them out with all the power and all the authority that he had been given, except it wasn't just the power and the authority that was represented by some badge. It was the power and the authority represented by the power that God had to teach and that God had to heal and to save and to drive out demons. So Jesus deputizes the disciples, sends them out. In my opinion, right, of all the responsibilities to be given, of all the important things to be called to, of all the, you know, significant kind of work that God might have for us, that seems like a biggie. Seems like a big one to me. Preaching the good news of Jesus to an unbelieving world, performing mind-boggling miracles in front of people who are filled with doubt, healing the sick, casting out evil spirits. That seems like a pretty high calling. And Jesus gives them a handful of instructions for how to, you know, how best to go about their work. And then in verses 12 to 13, it says this in Mark chapter 6. It says this, "So the disciples went out, telling everyone they met to repent of their sin," which just meant to turn from their sin and to turn back to God. Verse 13, it says, and they did. It says, they cast out many demons and healed many sick people, anointing them with oil. Long story short, these guys are crushing it. Skip down to verse 30 now. It says this, the apostles, it's the disciples that Jesus sent out. The apostles returned to Jesus from their ministry tour, and they told him all they had done and all they had taught. Imagine this, they're filling in Jesus, they're comparing stats, you know, who traveled the farthest, who worked the longest day, who healed the most people, who cast out the most evil spirits, and whose spirits were the most evil and the hardest to cast out in the first place. They're reporting to Jesus all that they had done. And then verse 31, here's what Jesus says to them. He says, "Well done, my good and faithful servants. But don't stop now. The job ain't finished yet. The devil doesn't get a day off, so neither do you. There's more people to teach. There's more people to hear. There's more spirits to be cast out. So get back out there and get after it. Hashtag keep on grinding." Anyone memorize that verse in Sunday school? No hands going up. Well, that's because that's from the JNST version of the Bible, which is the Jesus never said that version of the Bible. That's how you and I would respond to the things that we've got to accomplish. That's how you and I in the world today would respond to the progress that we got to make in life. Keep on grinding. But I want you to hear what Jesus said to his disciples. I want you to hear, he didn't say that. I want you to hear what he did say to his disciples, to whom he had given the greatest assignment. When the stakes were high and when they were working against all odds. Here's what he did say. Okay, they returned, they reported all they had done and said, and then here's the actual verse 31 and 32. Then Jesus said to them, "Let's go off by ourselves to a quiet place and rest a while." He said, "Let's call a timeout. Let's take a break, fellas. Good work. But now let's press pause on all of that good stuff for just a second." Listen to this. He said this, verse 32 goes on to say, Jesus said this because there were so many people coming and going. So many people demanding their time that Jesus and his disciples didn't even have time to eat. And so they left by boat for a quiet place where they could be alone. "Let's go rest a while," he says. Plenty of work to do. Jesus brings the whole thing to a halt. Why stop? Right? I mean, wasn't their mission a pretty important one? Yes, it was. I think it was quite possibly one of the highest callings anyone could receive. Was their work finished yet? No, it wasn't. Weren't there more people to teach and more people to heal and more people to save? Yes, tons of people coming and going, demanding their time. Wasn't there more ground to cover? Absolutely there was. But Jesus knew that what they needed most was time to rest. He knew they needed to rest. He knew they needed to refocus and to recharge with him, right? He knew that they needed a moment to catch their breath. And so he says, in response to them reporting all that they had done, he says to them in the face of people coming and going, he says, "Let's go off and rest a while. Let's go off somewhere where we can be alone." Gang, I wonder how many of us Jesus is pleading with for the very same thing. I wonder if it's possible that Jesus has been pleading with you. "Hey, let's go off together for a bit to rest." I wonder if it's possible that Jesus has been pleading with you. "Hey, you've been running hard. Hey, you've got a lot on your plate. Hey, you've got some big things to accomplish. Hey, you've got some progress still to make, but maybe you need to press pause for a second and go somewhere where you and where we can be alone. Somewhere where we can rest a while." Jesus understood the necessity of rest. He not only commanded it, but he modeled it. He understood the relationship between pace and progress. We see this pattern in Jesus' life and in his ministry over and over again if we scan through the scriptures, right? He's teaching in the synagogue, healing the sick, and then immediately after, he goes alone to pray. right? There's an amazing moment where Jesus feeds, the scriptures say 5,000. In reality, we know that it was much closer to 20,000. He feeds thousands of people in an impromptu dinner party. And immediately after, he goes to the mountainside to be alone and to pray. For those of you who know the story, what did Jesus do in the moments before he was crucified? Right? In the final hours before he accomplished the biggest assignment that God had given to him, the one thing that ultimately he was sent to do, to die on a cross for you and for me and to give up his life so that we could have life. What did he do in the moments just prior to fulfilling the one thing God called him to? He went to the garden to pray, to be alone, to rest, to quiet his soul, and to refocus on what God called him to do. Folks, I think the same has got to be true for us. There is a relationship between pace and progress that we've got to get right. If there is going to be space in our life this year or any year, there's a relationship between the two that we've got to get right. If there's going to be space for God, if there's going to be space for the things of God in our life, and if there's going to be spiritual progress made this year in a way that God might want for us. I really do believe it's opposite of what we live and what we breathe and what we're told every day, but I really do believe that a slower pace is actually going to be the thing that leads to greater progress in our life, right? Sometimes the further we want to go, the more we are going to have to learn to stop, right? Sometimes the bigger the impact that we want to make somewhere, the deeper a breath we've got to take somewhere else. Midcurrent, we have got to cut hurry and hustle out of our lives. It's not getting us anywhere important any faster. We've got to learn how to slow our pace way down, sometimes to a stand still, so that we can learn the discipline of rest. At the very least, this is fascinating. If you're you know, have a more scientific mind to you, at the very least, our brain needs it. Scientists have determined that the brain actually requires substantial downtime to remain at its peak and to generate the most innovative thinking and the most innovative ideas. I was reading an article this week in an online publication of the Scientific American, and it was talking about our need for what it called idleness. It said idleness is not just a vacation. It's not just an occasional, indulgence or an occasional vice. It said it's something that we need way more of than we think. In fact, they said it's as indispensable to the brain as vitamin D is to our body. It said it's paradoxically, meaning like it's so absurd, it's so crazy, you won't even think about it. It said that idleness is paradoxically necessary to getting any work done. Idleness necessary to getting work done. Later on in the article talked about downtime and how it replenishes the brain's command centers for attention and for motivation. It says downtime encourages productivity and creativity, and it's essential to achieve our highest levels of performance. See, it's not even just a spiritual thing. It's just a thing. Slower pace, greater progress. And here's the way my mind works. I'm thinking like this. If physical rest and physical idleness in downtime is that good for our brain, imagine what spiritual rest, imagine what time with God, Imagine what it could do for our heart and for our soul. Imagine what it could do for the progress that we want to make in life. Imagine what it could do for the progress we want to make in faith and in relationships and with following Jesus. Imagine the love that you could find in the presence of God. Imagine the purpose that you could discover in more downtime with God. Imagine the confidence and the courage that could develop inside of you with more downtime with God. I think it's only possible if we cut hurry out of our everyday lives. So let me just ask you, how good are you at pressing pause? Think about your own life. Take a little spiritual inventory in your own heart. How good are you at pressing pause? How often do you choose to stop and to spend time with God? Okay, this isn't my suggestion because, you know, Jesus followers are supposed to do quiet time. This is my suggestion because I don't think we make progress in faith. I don't think we hear from God. I don't think we develop intimacy with God without intentionality. That's why it's my suggestion, okay? This kind of intimacy, this kind of hearing for God, it doesn't just happen by accident. It's not like you just kind of unexpectedly get an hour of free time to go, oh, I think I'll spend it in the presence of God. That doesn't happen, gang. You have to intentionally and deliberately press pause. You have to find a way in your own everyday life, and I get it. I know the long list of things we gotta do. Trust me, I get it, right? But we've gotta find a way. We've gotta find a way to stop everything because it's not stopping for us unless we choose to stop for it. A faster pace, keep on grinding. A faster pace, gang, is not the key to greater progress. In any area of our life, I just don't think that the faster we go, the further we go. I don't think the faster we go, do we end up the places that we ultimately want to be. So my encouragement to you is figure out a way to spend time alone. You got to choose to get alone. Solitude is an intentional, consistent, deliberate pause for the sole purpose of hearing from heaven. It's time with your Creator where you let His word nourish your soul, where you let His voice speak into your life, where you let His voice speak and convict and challenge and comfort and love, and where you let His voice direct your steps every single day. It is only with intentionality. There is no intimacy without this kind of intentionality. I've never met anyone who is filled with God's Spirit that isn't intentional about the time that they spend with Him. It is paradoxically necessary, even with all that we have on our plate, even with a long list of things that we gotta do, it is paradoxically necessary that we get away every day. That we get away every day. That we spend time in the presence of God. I don't know, this could look a million different ways for you. You gotta get away every day. You could spend time in the presence of God in the morning. That's been my sacred time with God as of late. And it's not because I'm a morning person. I'm not even close to that. But I've made myself into a morning person. And now I start to crave this time that I have alone in the morning with God. I start to crave, as crazy as it sounds, and there was a time in my life when I wouldn't have believed it myself, but right, I've started to crave that time in the morning much more than I crave Netflix late at night the night before. So figure out if it's in the morning, spend time at night or over lunch. I don't know what it is for you, but here's what you got to do. You got to prioritize what you value most over what you want right now. You got to prioritize what you value and what you want most then over what you want right now. You got to learn to say no to some things. You got to learn to set boundaries that protect your time, for the things that matter most, so that God doesn't get what's just left over, but that God gets the best of you in the part of your day that you will hear best from Him. The choice is up to you, gang. And I think the pace that you choose will determine the progress that you make. So choose wisely, because if 2024 is going to be the year, if now is going to be the time that we create more space for God, more space for the things of God in our life, if this is going to be the year that we make progress in life and faith, then it might be time to reevaluate the pace at which we are operating. And it might be time to cut out the noise and to cut out the hustle and to eliminate the hurry from our lives as often as we can, because I'm not sure it's getting us to anywhere that we really want to be. Let me pray for us. Hey God, we live in a fast-paced world and we have fast-paced lives that pull us in a ton of different directions. So I don't suggest that we slow it down as if I'm naive or ignorant or as if I just don't get what it's like to have a lot to do, God. And so I am asking, God, because I know the significance, because we've seen in your life and in the life of your disciples, God, because we have seen the significance of finding time to get away, even when there is still plenty to do, God, because we're seeing the significance of it, I'm just asking that you would help each of us to know how, to know where, and to know when in our lives that we can begin to get away every day. God, would you help us to find time? Would you help us to want time with you? God, would you help us to pursue intentionality so that we might begin to experience greater intimacy with you? God, would you help us to slow our pace down so that we might begin to make even greater progress in the lives we're living and the things that you have called us to? God, most of all, we thank you for your son, Jesus, who modeled this for us, God, and who amazingly gave up his life for us so that we could have life. We pray all these things in the name of him. Amen.
Thank you for listening to this week's message from Midcurrent Church. For more information and to visit us online, check out midcurrentchurch.org and follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Midcurrent Church is located at 200 First Street in downtown Hudson, Wisconsin. Be sure to join us on Sunday mornings, both online and in person at 9 and 10:30 a.m.